You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 9th of August 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to talk a little bit about the way that our history is being rewritten and our ancestors are being slandered. And this happens because you can really only have one person's view of history. You can't see things from two people's point of view. And when you're talking about history, you're talking about a nation's history. You're talking about one particular people group and their history, the way that they see history. And of course, it's not going to be in the same way that another people group views history. We can see this particularly with religious events where we look and we see the different peoples, they have different religions. They're essentially talking about the same event, say Noah's flood, and yet you end up with various different versions of that story because they're being told by various different witnesses. It's not to say that the history is wrong, it's just to say that that person saw things from a different viewpoint. So if you have a multicultural area and you then try to tell a history that includes everybody from that multicultural area, you're going to end up with a completely inaccurate history, because instead of giving the eyewitness account, you're going to be giving an account that tries to be inclusive and include people that may not have been there in the first place. And the effects of this are these various reviews that are going on around the country at the moment, looking at monuments, looking at museums, looking at stately homes, and seeing if they have any connection with empire at all. And if they have a connection with empire, the people are accused of being racist. And they say that the empire was racist. And of course, there's no worse accusation that you can make against anybody than calling them racist. So in effect, what we're doing is we're slandering our ancestors. We're calling them racists. I don't believe that they were racist in the sense that we understand racism today to mean oppressing other people or discriminating against other people out of a hatred for them. There was no hatred for these other races. We wanted the best for them. That's why we studied them. That's why we did away with slavery. That's why we developed their countries for them and taught them about democracy, and we brought them medicine and we brought them education, and we did all these things for them because we saw it as our duty to improve their lives. Now, the people of the past, they knew that there was a difference between us and these other peoples because we had developed all these things. We had developed technology, we had developed science, writing, law, all the trappings of civilization we had developed. And yet we came across other peoples in Australasia and in Africa that hadn't developed these things. So they saw these people as somehow not being up to the standard that white people were at, because white people had developed all these things and these other peoples hadn't. And instead of being mean to them and thinking, ha-ha, we can turn these people into slaves and we can abuse them, we thought, well, isn't it sad that these people haven't got the benefits of civilization? We should give them the benefits of civilization. We should help them out. But obviously, you can't just give people the benefits of civilization and they suddenly advance thousands of years as if they've already had this civilization. You have to be careful with it. You have to introduce people to things slowly. They have to learn about reading and writing and mathematics and science and all the rest of it. And it took quite some time to get these peoples up to the standards where they would be capable of governing themselves. Because up to this point, you just had tribal warfare between these groups in Africa. In India, you had this tribal warfare that was going on. So we worked hard to develop the countries for these people and to educate the best of them so that they could, in effect, rule themselves. And after the Second World War, we gave up the British Empire so that these peoples could rule themselves. And I don't see that as being a bad thing. I don't think the motives of our ancestors were wrong. I think it came from a place of caring about these peoples. And when you look at slavery, when they came across Africa, the Africans were enslaving other Africans and selling them. And our ancestors saw this and they thought, well, if that's all they have to offer, then we might as well make use of it. We need people to work on these farms in America where the temperature is too hot for white people to work. And these conditions are just the sort of conditions that these black African slaves are used to working in. So why don't we purchase some of these black African slaves? They can work for us on the farm. And in exchange, we'll provide a roof over their head. We'll clothe them. We'll feed them. We'll medicate them. We'll make sure that they're kept in the very best condition and that they have a happy life. And that was the way that it was looked at. There were a minority of slave owners who mistreated their slaves, but the majority of them treated them well. And we can see that when slavery was actually done away with, these slave owners gave lots of land to their former slaves and lots of farming implements and lots of livestock. And they gave them everything that they could so that they could make a living for themselves without somebody else doing it all for them. And the slaves were really concerned at the time, how are we going to survive without the master to do all the complicated work for us? And it wasn't long before they had lost all that land and all the farming implements were rusting away. I mean, you can look at the statistics for this. It's all in a book which is called The Truth About Lynching in the South, I think, or The Truth About Race and Lynching in the South. And we actually did away with slavery because we didn't like it. We thought, well, this is a bad thing. We need to stop this. And the black Africans didn't want to stop it. They were very angry about it. They had been doing it for thousands of years. They had songs about dreaming of catching as many slaves as they possibly could and owning as many slaves as they possibly could. I was looking at a Wikipedia about one particular country in Africa the other day. And just the whole mentality was, you are nobody if you don't own slaves. So we had to contend with this mentality over there in Africa. And David Livingstone saw this and he said, well, the best way to stop slavery is if we colonize Africa, if we build railroads between the colonies, and if we then teach the Africans to create goods and to extract the wealth and extract the minerals and the oil and everything else that Africa is rich in, and then we can get the Africans trading with the rest of the world. And instead of trading slaves for the goods that the Africans want, they can trade their own goods for the goods that the Africans want. So we colonized Africa and we taught them to produce their own goods and we did away with slavery. And yet today, we're told that we are somehow responsible for slavery. It is completely untrue and nobody is pointing to the true history of this. And we have all these reviews going on, which effectively turn history upside down and make some of the greatest philanthropists in our history out to be evil racists. Now, I'm talking about this today because there's a review that's just taken place in Sheffield, which is rather interesting. Sheffield Council is developing a plan to address racism and inequality in the city's culture sector, following a review. Well, I don't believe there is any racism or inequality in the city's culture sector. We had a review by the government that found that there was no such thing as institutional racism in Britain. I'm sure that Sheffield City is the same as every other city in multicultural Britain, and it has diversity quotas, and it particularly looks for people of ethnic heritage to design things and to create things so that they can point to how diverse they are. Well, the review was co-produced by Sheffield Council, Sheffield Museums, the University of Sheffield and Sheffield Hallam University, and presented to Sheffield's Race Equality Commission this week during hearings on sport and culture. It presents an overview of issues related to race and equality that are embedded in the physical fabric of the city, both in plain sight and deeply structural. The initial purpose was to find if Sheffield had any offensive statues or monuments following Black Lives Matter protests last year that saw the toppling of a statue of Edward Colston, a slave trader, in Bristol. So straight away they're saying that somehow we have statues that are offensive to some people in Britain. But if our statues and monuments were put up to great people, and they always were, they weren't put up to bad people. You don't put up a monument to somebody that you think is a bad person, then how could anybody see them as being offensive today, who are descended from the people that those statues represent? And this is the issue. It's people that are not descended from the people who these statues represent that find them offensive. So straight away, you've got a fracture there in society. We now have a fractured society between people that are new to the country, that don't see themselves reflected in these statues, and the people that are descended from the people who built the country, who are represented in these statues. The review stated that there are no statues, such as the Edward Colston one in Sheffield, but there are features across the city in street names, collections, and public art which perpetuate racist, outdated, and uncomfortable messages, and an inadequate expression of its large and diverse population. And a better way to put that would be to say that there are features that reflect the ideas of the time. We can't go looking through history and saying, well, everybody that doesn't agree with the way that we think today, they should be cancelled and they should be wiped out. They should be honoured. There are things that we do today that I'm sure in the future we will look back on and say, how absolutely dreadful. How on earth could we have thought that that was a good thing to do? But we can't just wipe out history and pretend that they didn't happen. I mean, I find it really scandalous that YouTube and Google and the rest of the internet, they just wiped the internet after Donald Trump got elected of all the support that there was for Donald Trump. Hundreds of thousands of videos were removed from YouTube. And any historian in the future that looks to the internet to find out what was going on in 2016, 2017, 2015, they're going to say, well, this is unbelievable, because how did Donald Trump get elected? There was no support for him. There was no support for Donald Trump whatsoever. And yet somehow the guy got elected. How did that happen? And it's going to be a question that they're going to be asking themselves in the future, because all the support for Donald Trump was removed after he got elected. They effectively tried to rewrite history. And when you try to rewrite history, it doesn't make sense. Councillor Abtissam Mohammed, Executive Member for Poverty, Fairness and Equality at the Council, said, "Our streets, buildings and monuments tell the story of this city and they shape our experience, understanding and relationship with it. This report and the work of the Race Equality Commission is an opportunity to go forward and establish an honest and reflective relationship with Sheffield's history and heritage, not to rewrite or shame, but to tell a balanced story and to learn for the future." Well, is he going to do that, though? I don't think that is the point of this review. They don't want to tell a balanced story, because there was already a balanced story. And the monuments of the story of the city were explaining the history of the city, who it was that built the city and the mentality that they had that enabled them to build the city. He continues, "Our diverse communities are the living soul of this city. We want all of them to feel valued and at home here, that their roots are honoured and respected, and for Sheffield's story to be inclusive, up-to-date and authentic. For that to happen, those stories have to be told by the people who live within them and are a part of Sheffield's next chapter." Well, they're not honouring their roots, are they? because they're trying to tell them that they're now British and that their history is British history, when their history is going to be a completely different history. Their history is going to be the history of Pakistan or the history of India or the history of Africa. It's not going to be the history of the British people or told from the British people's point of view. And this is the point here. This is why they're trying to change the history. And to say for this to happen, these stories have to be told by the people who live within them. Well, fair enough. I mean, you can tell the stories of the people that are here now, or you could make statues of the people that are here now. But you can't go back any further than 70 years. I mean, the history of multicultural Britain only goes back 70 years. So the only way you are going to be able to include these people truthfully is if you're representing recent history. History that goes back past that point should just be left alone, because the most accurate history is the history that is told by the source documents, the documents that were produced closest to the time of the event in history. They are always going to be the most accurate representation. So to then, hundreds of years later, say, oh no, this is wrong, we need to be looking at this from a different viewpoint, it can't be correct. You have to go back to the original viewpoint to be correct. Street names identified included those referring to people who were heavily involved in slavery, such as Canning Street, Cannon Hall Road, and Dundas Road. Violent suppression, including Cromwell Street, Gordon Road, and Havelock Street, and Empire. For example, Empire Road, Jamaica Street, and Kingston Street. So what are they talking about here? These road names are offensive. I mean, these road names represent the point of view that there was at the time. There was support for Oliver Cromwell. I don't support Oliver Cromwell. I think Oliver Cromwell did untold damage to our country. He was a regicide, and his corpse was rightfully dug up and hanged and desecrated for the crimes which he committed against the English people and the Irish people. But I wouldn't want to see a street that is dedicated to him removed, because what that street does, it says, well, there were a sizable number of people in Britain that think that Cromwell was wonderful. They think that he was really good, and I'm a tolerant person. I'm not a bigot. I don't think that people should not be allowed to hold different views to me. I don't think that people should not be allowed to praise people that I don't think should be praised. I think they should be allowed to. I think we have to be tolerant of other people's views in order to get on. So in these instances, I would not want to see these street names changed, even though some of these people here are people that I don't think a lot of. When they talk about empire here, are we supposed to pretend the British Empire didn't happen? Are we supposed to now not be proud of the fact that we led the world and we had the greatest navy in the world and we were the most powerful country in the world from this tiny little island? We ruled for as far as the eye could see. The sun didn't set on the British Empire. We now not supposed to be proud of that? Well, there are certain elements of empire that we can't be proud of. We can't be proud of the famines. We can't be proud of the massacres. But that has to be weighed up against the civilization that we brought to these people, and the increased life expectancy and the increased health. I mean, when you measure it up against the life expectancy and health of these countries now, it's phenomenal. If you look at the numbers that there were in Africa 150 years ago and compare it to the numbers that there are in Africa now, it's incredible that they could claim that they were somehow oppressed or treated badly. The review also found a stark lack of diversity in the city's monuments. Of the 100 on the council's asset register, none are dedicated to a non-white figure, and of the 20 Sheffield Legends plaques celebrating contemporary Sheffield personalities set into the pavement outside the town hall, there is only one for Dame Jessica Ennis Hill, celebrating someone of ethnically diverse heritage. Well, this is to be expected, isn't it? If you've only had multiculturalism for the last 70 years, there's only going to be a limited number of outstanding non-whites that you would wish to honour. This is the fact of history. When they see that of the asset register, all 100 of them are white. That is because the history of Britain is a history of a white people. It's not a history of a people that had non-whites here. We didn't have slavery here. There was a small black community that were here in the time of Queen Elizabeth I, I think it was. And there was complaints made that they were taking jobs that the indigenous British people needed, and Queen Elizabeth I ordered them all to be deported, and they were deported. And that's the only mention that we have of a non-white community within Britain, and that was only a very tiny, 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 tiny group of people that you were talking about at the time. So where are you going to find legendary non-whites within British history? You're just not going to find any. It's not a problem. It's not something that is wrong. It's an accurate reflection of the indigenous British people. It was noted in the report that many of the historical figures celebrated in Sheffield were social reformers and abolitionist campaigners, such as James Montgomery and Mary Ann Rawson, but these should be built in a more representative way in the future. So again, what that tells us is that the people that were honoured were people that actually cared about the people around them. They were social reformers and people that were against slavery. These are the people that were honoured, and yet we're being told now that it's no good because they're all white. Well, it was white people that were leading the world at this time. If we look to black Africans, there weren't any black African people that were against slavery. It was the black Africans that were the hardest to convince to give slavery up. So the fact of the matter is, you're not going to find black social reformers or black abolitionist campaigners. They don't actually form a part of history. The same problem was found with the city's public artworks, including historic and recent commissions. Although works over the last 5 years were not yet added, of the 277 works listed, only one is by an artist who has an ethnically diverse heritage, Benjamin Zephaniah. And Benjamin Zephaniah hates the British Empire. He refused to accept an award when the Queen wished to award him. He's very anti-white people. He's very anti-British history. And yet he is honoured. I mean, this shows you how tolerant a people we are. We will honour somebody who dishonours us. And again, this is because there is only a limited number of non-white figures that you could actually use. And that's not because white people are at fault in some way. Within the city's libraries, staff identified older titles which could be seen as racist or selective in historical accuracy, but these were not removed as they reflect society and thinking at a particular time. Well, that's good, but I suspect they will try to so-called contextualise them by pointing out what horrible, mean people they were that actually wrote them. In Sheffield City Archives, it was identified that the collection reflects more of what was given, rather than a deliberately curated representative view of the city, and this needed to be addressed. So again, this is the point. These collections and these artworks were donated by people, and they were donated by the sort of people that were philanthropic, that cared about society, that wanted to do their best for society. They had done well in life, and they thought, well, it's not fair that I should do well in life and everybody else shouldn't, so I'm going to try and give something back, and I'm going to give artwork that can then be shown to the community. So the fact that these artworks were donated rather than created, again, it shows that these were good people. And it also tells us that we didn't have a non-white community here, because otherwise, well, where are the non-white artworks that would have been donated if we had the community here? Are they going to tell us that we did have them here as a community, but they just didn't want to donate the artworks? Sheffield Museums recognised that work needed to be done to decolonise its collections through researching and reviewing, reinterpreting, returning items to communities of origin, and collaborating with communities and partners across the city. Well, hang on a minute. They've told us that there isn't any representation of non-whites here. So what items is it that they wished to return to the communities of origin. In the review, it said Britain's colonial history, racism, and the legacy of slavery are woven throughout Sheffield's collections, and we recognise and will seek to address these offensive ideologies and uncomfortable truths. So once again, they're accusing our ancestors of racism. They're accusing our ancestors of the very worst ad hominem that you can actually call anyone today. They're saying that we have a legacy of slavery in Britain, when in actual fact our legacy is that we put a stop to slavery. And they're saying now that our colonial history is somehow a bad thing. Our colonial history, I mean, what are you going to do? You keep producing children. You know that you live in a limited country with limited resources, and that means that your children are going to have to go out and find new territory for themselves. And that's what our ancestors did. And they went out and they discovered Australia, and they discovered New Zealand, and they discovered America, and they brought civilization with them, and they tamed the wilderness, and they were pioneers, and they built these wonderful first world countries that we have today, that the third world sees and the third world wants for themselves. They all wish to be a part of the first world. They all wish to have a part of what white people created. And yet us as whites, we look on that and we now look at it in a negative view, and we say Britain's colonial history, that's a terrible thing. That's a terrible thing. We say our ancestors were racist, the worst word that we can use. And we say all the opposite of the truth when we say there is a legacy of slavery woven throughout these collections. What about the legacy of slavery woven throughout Africa, which never gets mentioned? The issues were discussed in a Race Equality Commission hearing today. And when giving evidence, Desiree Reynolds, writer in residence at Sheffield Archives, where she is addressing obvious silences, said the city was losing black artists because of the lack of representation. I find that hard to believe. So what is she saying there? That there are black artists, and because they don't see statues of black people, they're going to leave the city? That's not true. That can't be true. There are obviously going to be diversity quotas within art in this city. And in actual fact, she points one out. She says, for example, there was £5,000 worth of funding available for a Windrush project, but this was given to an entirely white company. She said it was only after intervention by black creatives that this money was given back, and the council is reallocating it. Well, why didn't they apply for it then? Why didn't the black people apply for the funding for a Windrush project, which clearly they're going to get, because a Windrush project is going to be concentrated on black people, particularly the descendants of the so-called Windrush generation. So why didn't they apply for it? And the very fact that there was this funding available, £5,000 worth of funding, shows that there are these drives to increase diversity. But they're not happy with that. They want to replace the history that we have here. They want to replace the monuments that we have here. They want to tell us that our ancestors were bad people. And it's not necessarily the non-whites that are doing this, of course. There's plenty of white people that are involved in it. What it is it's anti-whites. That's what it is that unites these people, whether they're white, whether they're non-white, whether they're Jewish. It doesn't matter what they are. The thing that unites them is that they are anti-white. And the majority of this anti-whiteness, sadly, comes from white people. It's a defective way of thinking. It's a maladaptive way of thinking, because it will end up in destroying our civilization eventually. You cannot slander and slur your ancestors and think that they are terrible people and still continue as a people, because you will think, well, I don't want to create any more children because we're such evil people. Why would I want to create more when our ancestors were evil? We might as well just give up. And that's the mentality that our people have now. That's why here at Radio Albion, we try to tell the positive stories about our past. We try to encourage our people to be the best people that they can be. And we try to tell them that they are valued, because anybody that reads things like this and is white is going to think, well, I have no value, do I? My ancestors have no value. They just want to they just want to rubbish everything that my ancestors did. And we're here to tell people that they are valued, white people are valued, and we think white people are the very best people in the world. And of course we would think that, because we are white, and we're very thankful for that. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.